I've been around a long, long time. And I know that Seattle's food scene, it's blossomed, it's diversified, it's changed. Restaurants are flourishing. People come from all over the world now to try not just our restaurants, but the natural bounty, the oysters, the berries, Stroll Pike Place Market. How do we get here? The Museum of History and Industry is asking that question in a new exhibit called Edible City. The curator, Rebecca Den, says some of our local food stories will surprise you. For example, did you know Cinnabon is from Seattle? Cinnabon, the cinnamon roll stand at a mall near you.
Cinnabon is so from Seattle because you had this restaurant company, Restaurants Unlimited, Inc. They have all these different restaurants, but it's owned by a couple of people. It's not owned by a huge corporate office somewhere else. And the owners start realizing that shopping malls are becoming places where people want to hang out and maybe get a bite to eat. And they say,
what year was this?
I believe it was 1985, although you should double check me on it. And they say, let's develop a cinnamon roll. We know this fabulous baker in Edmonds. Her name is Geraldine Brousseau. She ran a bakery called Brousseau's, and they called her in to see if she could develop a cinnamon roll recipe for them. So they're big enough that they have a test kitchen on North Lakeway. She goes in and bakes like 2 to 4 batches of cinnamon rolls a day for months. And the Komen family is there tasting them with her, giving advice, trying to develop the right thing. And then Seattle had this spice company, Crescent, which was huge back in the day. And they said, can we come do a cinnamon school and help you figure out exactly the right kind of cinnamon that you might want to use? So they figured that all out. They developed a Cinnabon. They called Geraldine the Cinnamom. And yeah, they opened their first store at SeaTac Mall.
In Federal Way.
Yes. And because the owners are there and hands-on, they're able to make all these little adjustments. Like, oh, the dough is rolled out the wrong way here. Let's change the dimensions. Let's do this. And it becomes huge. It becomes, it goes wild.
But why don't we know that? Why isn't it Seattle's famous Cinnabon?
I don't know why. How Seattle kind of got lost in that. Maybe that's why we have an inferiority complex. If you're in Philadelphia, you've got your cheesesteaks. And if you're in Maine, you've got your lobster rolls. And then you come to Seattle and sort of what is our food here?
The listener is yelling salmon at you right now.
Yes, there is salmon. And yet you take someone around town and you don't have a salmon sandwich. Maybe you've got a $50 fillet of Copper River salmon for a week in the right season. But you don't have a dish, I think, that you point to.
Right. That's more of a food of the people?
Yes, exactly. And I think lately people have sort of come to realize that we're kind of defined by the ingredients around us in general, by the things that are a product of our geography. And salmon's one of them. But you have shellfish in general. You have berries. You have all of the fruits and vegetables that grow naturally here. And then you have the foods that were brought in by the different groups of people that have come to the city and kind of come to define it. You have teriyaki and you have pho. And I think when you live here, you don't always realize that not everybody has these foods, that not everyone can walk down the street and be picking blackberries as they walk by. And you can't choose between 20 different pho places because it's just not the corner thing everywhere.
Yes, so you put together this historical tour of Seattle food, and what's the story you're telling with your show?
We're trying to tell people, what is a Seattle food, and how did we get here? And there's this long, long history in the city of, you see some themes sort of repeating, where you have, I think in the modern day, like you look at Renee Erickson's oyster bars, and I remember her saying, when she first opened the Morris and the Carpenter, why don't we have a kind of casualish place here where someone can just go and get a dozen oysters and walk in and walk out? And I thought, yeah, why don't we? And then researching the exhibit, you're looking at oyster bar menus from the 1890s.
Right.
And they look almost just the same. Hey, walk in and wow, we have our famous, specific Olympia oysters only here. These things sort of have been here.
The price has changed a little.
The price has definitely changed. The funny thing is that Seattle has always had such an inferiority complex, I think, about itself. And even that stretches back because you have these advertisements for our Olympia oysters, and they say in big letters near the top, in California, sometimes wrongly called California oysters. And it's like, oh, dear Seattle, you know, even way back then you had to defend yourself.
Why do you think we've had an inferiority complex?
I think we always felt like we weren't big enough. We weren't shiny enough. And that's something that's maybe been changing this last 10, 20 years or so, that we are big and we are shiny. And with food, we do have a place on the national scene, maybe for the first time in our history. And yet, one thing I think I really found through the exhibit was that not being huge is sort of what made us what we are and what helped make us special.
How's that?
Well, you had all these things happen here that couldn't have happened if we were enormous. There's Urban Spoon.
It's an early food app, like a restaurant search.
Exactly. App. And you had these guys here saying, if we were in New York, we would have been crushed. We were just three guys who had an idea. And in Seattle, everyone was friendly. Everyone supported us and helped us and tried us out. And yet it was big enough, you had enough restaurants, that we could actually try this out and make it work. And too small wouldn't have worked. In New York or San Francisco, you couldn't have done it. But Seattle was just right.
And didn't the Urban Spoon come and go?
Well, they were bought out by a large company. And I would rather that they were still here doing their thing than that they were owned by a giant international corporation. But they did something great, and they did it here. And they couldn't have done it other places.
Do you? By the way, you bring up tech. We're a tech city now. Does that show up on our tables or in our food world?
I think it really does. And the sort of interesting question for me was, why do all these tech people go into food? And one of the answers we got from All Recipes, which is the on and off the world's largest food site, one of their executives said, well, we love to eat. But I think what you've always seen, and this is true even back with other kinds of technology, like when you've had Boeing workers looking for other careers, or when the Boeing bus laid off and needing something else to do, people have always turned to food because everyone needs to eat. There's always some kind of jobs that can be found there. And I think something about the mind of someone who is good at technology in a lot of ways is well-suited to things in the food business. Like you have Armandino Batali was a Boeing engineer for like 30 years or something. And when he retires, then he starts up Salumi, this wonderful, famous cured meats company. To do Salumi properly, you need to be at least half a scientist. It's something that you need that particular kind of brain to do. And I feel like if he hadn't been an engineer, I don't know that he would have been so great at making cured meat. Something about Seattle is that people tend to stay here. And we're a beautiful place to live. There's a lot to love about it. Even when times get hard, people have not wanted to leave. And so you see these large projects drawing people in, and then people tend to stay and start up their own things.
So what do you want your viewer at this Mohai exhibit to come away thinking differently about the food of Seattle?
I guess I want them to realize how much our geography here and the people who live here and how that changes over time affect the food that we eat. I hope they realize that we actually do have Seattle foods and we do have a Seattle way of eating, and that at this point you could look at a plate or you could walk through an area and say this is the Northwest. This is a kind of Seattle food and maybe even a kind of Seattle person who eats it.
So you said we started by saying that there's not that identifiable Seattle food of the people. You have Copper River salmon or whatever, but that's different. So if I asked you, what's a Seattle food of the people, what comes to your mind now?
What mostly comes to my mind after all of this research is that it is a food that mixes the natural world with all kinds of different cultures. Who those cultures are has changed over the decades.
Because we're a very fertile place, and we're also facing westward, facing
Asia.
Exactly.
Yes, we have easy access to other areas. We've always been a place that people want to come. So 100 years ago, that might have been all of the Italian families who lived here. It might have been the Japanese-American farmers. It might have been the Scandinavian settlers.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you go on through the years, well, you have Indo-Chinese residents coming in the 1970s. And, whoa, you're seeing a difference even in the vegetables at Pike Place Market or the flowers that pop up there. You're seeing different kinds of restaurants. The city's first Ethiopian restaurant, I think, was in the 1970s, and that was from University of Washington students who wanted a taste of home. And the fact that we have schools here, that we have businesses that attract here, that we are, I think, a welcoming area for all different kinds of people, really affects the foods that we eat. And they keep changing as the city keeps changing.
Rebecca Den's exhibit opens this Saturday at MOHAI, Museum of History and Industry, South End of Lake Union. It's called Edible City, A Delicious Journey. And speaking of food, you might be about to have a Thanksgiving meal with somebody who backed your least favorite presidential candidate. I have an idea. Come to KUOW and hash it out on the radio. You and that family member on the radio, not live radio, will record your familial encounter. It might be healing. Send us an email. You can do this. Email us record@kuow.org. Record@kuow.org.